We get some questions. In November of 1988, the Forest Service came to Pacific Northwest Laboratory, where I work, and said that they had a mine restoration project, and they were interested in getting some help. And they talked to Argonne National Lab and some other laboratories, and they solicited us, so we came up and visited the site. And after about a month, they decided that they could work with us. They're interested in a research organization that had so-called multidiscipline type staff. So they needed hydrologists, water quality specialists, and fishery biologists, and people that knew about air quality and things like that. So we put together a team and met with them and signed a contract in January of 1989 to start the work. And what we were told at that time was, this site has been studied for the last 10 or 15 years, and so there's no need to do any more studies. But no more environmental studies, but it looks like we're going to have the money to do the restoration work, so we want you to go back and look at the data that's been collected and look at the other plans that have been put forth. And there were some fairly extensive construction plans that were designed. Orb was one company that put one out back in 1973. So we were to go through those and come up with basically update the construction plan and help them get their permits for doing the work that they had to do in the river and on the tailings. So we came up on the site, and it's pretty obvious we had a lot of questions that we were concerned about, but again, our charge was to write the plan. And so over the course of the last year and a half, we've written some plans and worked with CH2M Hill in Seattle. They actually did the construction design work. And since then, the Forest Service decided, yes, it's probably important that we do some additional studies, not only to get some information about what is happening now, because again, a lot of the other work was done in the early 80s and in the 70s, but they also want us to put together some monitoring plans to evaluate the success of this whole project. So what I'm going to talk about tonight, I guess, first is I'll give basically three parts. I'll talk about some of the environmental problems here, and then I'll talk about some of the construction activities and the actual rehabilitation plan, and then I'll talk about some of the environmental studies that we're doing right now. And first of all, keep in mind, I'm an aquatic ecologist. I can answer some other questions. I'll do my best, but again, I prefer to be out wading around in the water rather than doing things like air quality monitoring. Now, the purpose of this slide is simply so that those that are here and don't want to be here can leave now. The other reason is so when I look at my slides later, I'll know what talk I've got. Okay. First of all, there's no doubt that the operation of the mine has degraded the environment. You can look at the creek, you can look at the hillsides downwind, and it's obvious what has been left behind caused some serious problems here. I'll also let you know that the Forest Service construction plan will improve the conditions here. The conditions are not going to be normal. They're not going to go back to like they are in a wilderness area, but they're definitely going to be improved. And then finally, I'm going to tell you that the monitoring plans have been developed to evaluate the success. And this is important because you can spend a lot of money and do some things which you think will work or do something, but if you don't ever collect any information to find out what actually happens, then you really don't have any proof of that. And you also can't help other people when they've got plans in similar situations down the road. Okay, briefly, Holden Mine operated for 19 years, from 1938 to 1957. Mined over 10 million tons of ore, and this is pretty much the order of importance, copper, zinc, silver, and also some gold. You're looking at 80 acres of tailings that were deposited in the valley here, and that's quite a lot. I put this in, it's a schematic from, if anybody's seen the brochure, or it may even be on the Forest Service on their video, I'm not sure, but this shows basically how the tailings were constructed. This is Railroad Creek here, and it's my understanding that Railroad Creek was, a new channel was made, and it was a meandering stream through this valley. and that it was forced over into the existing channel. And cribbing was put in place to keep it in that area. And you can see the evidence for some of the meandering just downstream of the tailings now. Anyway, the cribbing was put in place, toe dam was built, and then a series of border dikes were built, and the tailings were slurried, and then there were it was ponded up, of course, and then there was a drain pipe and decant towers which were built to drain off all the liquid. And so as a series of dikes were built out and new tailings were crushed and slurried and deposited, then the tailings were built up in that order. And I'm not quite sure what the order of the tailings were. I don't know if what I call tailing pile 1, 2, and 3 were built in that order. But basically they built one pile and they didn't have enough room to put it, so they moved down to another pile. The other thing is, go ahead and interrupt me if you've got a burning question while I'm talking. It may stretch things out, but that's all right. I'll just go through some of the other slides quicker. This is basically one reason why people come to this area, because of the beauty. And again, ignoring this, we're looking up valley to the wilderness area. And that's why the Forest Service has decided to rehabilitate this area also, because of the closeness of the wilderness area. This is my project manager. I thought you'd like to see that. That's another reason why people come to Holden Village and to the wilderness area, is for relaxation. So those are a couple of things to keep in mind, is the scenic beauty and the rest and the fact that you don't want to worry about anything. And this is what people see. This is a view from up on top. And I don't know how many people in this room have got up on top and take the view, but take the look down valley, but when you first look at that, you can see there is absolutely nothing you can do with that, because the sheer immensity of it. You can't truck it out and haul it all away. You can't stuff it all back in the mine shaft. They tried that and didn't get it all in there.
Not quite.
Okay, but this is pile number one, and this is pile number two. Pile three is down over the top of three. It's a little bit lower elevation. So what are some of the problems? Well, first, the tailings are ugly. Nobody likes to look at them. There's airborne contaminants when the wind blows. There's quite a dust cloud out there. It took me about 3 trips here before I noticed that, before the wind blew, but it's not any fun being near the tailings or downwind when they're blowing. Severe problems with leachates from the tailing piles, that is when the water, surface water, erosion, and also the snow melt as it moves down the hillside and moves through the tailing piles, it leaches out the soluble constituents, the metals, and other contaminants directly out and into Railroad Creek.
Are you going to go into that in more detail?
Exactly what's in there?
No, I mean in terms of the going into specifically what's leaching, where it's leaching, and how all that.
Okay. I've got some information I'll talk about the portal drainage, which of course is obvious. It's almost a point source. Basically, that's a process that is not really understood, because you cannot go through and readily come up with a mass balance. In other words, you don't have all these point source or separate little diversions along where somebody can actually measure and determine, okay, so much comes from here, so much comes from here, so much comes from here. What it appears to be happening is that the water is moving down the hillside into the back of the tailing pile and then leaching through that. So if you can imagine it almost in that manner, I guess. And it gets into the groundwater. A lot of it then is not visible because it's getting forced down with hydrostatic pressure and then comes up into the creek bed.
Right. What I've heard is that the tailings basically are pretty impermeable.
The surface is.
The right. Surface is? Right. The way they were laid down and such, that you had, they're basically setting up a siltstone situation. Anyway, so they're actually getting quite a bit of water when it does pond on top, going right, filtering down through and then coming out as groundwater into a little.
No, that's what you said is partially true. the water that ponds on top basically, or used to, mm-hmm. before it was, now it's being intercepted.
It's going to drain, yeah.
Right. But what they determined based on observations that they were not vertically permeable.
It was horizontally permeable.
Yeah, and what appears to be happening is it's coming on the side slope, basically moving in that way. In a sense, the piles are getting recharged from the side slope. Now that's...
By side slope, you mean the existing...
Right,
hillside. The existing hillside.
Right. Now that's a theory, and we're doing one thing to monitor the water levels in the pile now that might substantiate whether or not that's occurring.
Yeah, that was the next thing I was going to ask you about. I heard that there have been some wells drilled and some monitoring going on. What specifically?
I've got, if you can wait, I'll go through the monitoring plans and then I'll show you exactly how those are constructed. Okay. Then again, another obvious problem is the mine portal drainage, and I've got some pictures of that, and we'll talk about that some more too.
What kind of chemicals are in the leachates?
For the most part, you're looking at copper and zinc are the two of the most problem, the highest concentrations and the most problem in terms of water quality.
How about arsenic?
There are measurable concentrations of arsenic and also lead. But look, the information that I've looked at indicates that both of those are below drinking water standards. So in terms of that they've measured in railroad creek. Those measurements are a lot harder to make and lots more expensive, so they haven't done that routinely. But when they did that in 1981 and 82, at that time, looking at that data, it looked like there was no reason for concern in the Railroad Creek water. Okay. Just some examples now of some of the things I've talked about, the problems. Here's the ugliness part of it. Here's the airborne pollution, and again, that there's just kind of an average dust storm in July, I think, of last year, and that stuff is deposited down on the forest floor, and it is deposited into the creek. And here's an example of some of the surface runoff, the leachates from the snowmelt. This is down along pile number one in the spring. And this is our favorite, the mine portal. Again, it's an obvious problem. One thing we did find out, though, is that the portal drainage it's only about 2% of the flow of Railroad Creek, so that there's a heck of a lot of dilution going on. And I hate to say dilution is the cure to pollution, but sometimes it is.
What are you saying? The flow out of the portal is 2% of the entire Railroad Creek runoff?
It never gets
that's
any higher.
Pretty high.
It never gets any higher than that.
To me, that's a pretty significant percentage.
Correct, but if the standards for something like, let's say, for copper, if it's 10 parts per billion, mm-hmm. that's diluted 50-fold, then you're looking down to 2/10 of a part per billion. Mm-hmm. And so again, that's kind of what we're judging things on mm-hmm. in terms of criteria.
What is most of the precipitate that you find on the rocks?
Iron hydroxide. That precipitates out. So what you're looking at is the metals. They come out of the portal drainage at a low pH, and when the pH is increased, then the metals precipitate out. They go out of solution. So they're soluble at low pH and measurable. But when they hit like Railroad Creek, the pH of the mine portal drainage is like 3 to 4, 5 in that range. And the pH of Railroad Creek is about 8. So that's another thing. As soon as those metals hit, the soluble metals get into Railroad Creek, they precipitate out, they're not in solution anymore, therefore they're not available for uptake by aquatic organisms, but they are on the rocks.
So that's what causes all the yellow.
So that's what you're looking at, right there. And basically the portal drainage meanders down through the forest floor, and during that time the metals, there is a loss of metals even during that short period of time before it gets into Railroad Creek. We're going to be doing some studies this summer to look at ways to mitigate the portal drainage. Maybe something as simple as running it through, as increasing the time that it takes to get into Railroad Creek, transit time, or aerating it. The other kind of thing may be just piling up a bunch of forest floor duff and running it through there. And all those kinds of things will probably serve to increase the pH and get the metals out of solution before they get into Railroad Creek. and that'll be going on this summer. This is what happens. We were just talking about that when the material hits the. This is primarily from leachates that get into Railroad Creek, and if you kick up the bottom, and you see that that flock or iron hydroxides, they're precipitated out. Another thing that happens is the bottom gets cemented. This shelf is about as solid as you can get, and this is cobble that has just been cemented together from that same process. This is just above Coppercreek at low flow. Another kind of thing happens is that the when the flows are high, it undercuts the tailings. This is the old cribbing, and it's rotting and no longer doing its job. And the material does go downstream. This is 2 miles above the mouth. We hiked downstream down the ridge from Dan's camp, and took some samples last year, and we had evidence of the tailings material deposited down there in the slack water areas. And all the way to Lake Chelan. So I don't know how much of the pretty color of Lake Chelan is from Railroad Creek. It may be some, though, from the metals, but there is a visible plume during the springtime, during high runoff. And so hopefully some of the work being done out here will reduce that. Okay, some of the major water quality issues. First, we've got chemical toxicity. The water in the portal drainage is toxic to aquatic life. The water in Railroad Creek has been measured at times to exceed the water quality standards for certain metals. Their Forest Service is going to take additional measurements this year. The last time they did it was 1981 and 82. 1 year they had some concentrations which exceeded state water quality standards. The other year they had the data indicated that there was no problem at all by the time things were in Railroad Creek. But they're going to continue to do some additional measurements starting maybe as early as this fall. Habitat alteration, that's critical to the aquatic organisms. When you don't, things like the periphyton, the attached algae that grow on rocks, cannot grow on the rocks because they're covered with that flock. And the aquatic insects don't have any place to hide because there's no interstitial space in between the rocks. And the fish have a problem because there's nothing for them to eat. So that's a problem also. Some of the mitigating factors. I talked earlier about dilution, and again, that does help. And particularly after the Railroad Creek gets past the tailings, there's a lot of flow coming in from the tributary creeks. There's at times the flows at Copper Creek, or where Copper Creek and Railroad Creek come together, only about 40% of the total for the drainage. So again, things are diluted about 2.5 times on the way down to Lake Chelan. The metals precipitate out. And then finally, a lot of things are simply scoured and transported directly out of the system. So everything that is leached out is deposited in Railroad Creek since there was a problem. Things would be more serious now than they are.
Can you explain that a little more?
Where does it go?
Oh, it goes to Lake Chelan.
Oh, wow.
So the water quality study that the University of Washington did in Lake Chelan, I think they published that about a year and a half ago, indicated that basically the transport of metals from Railroad Creek had been about the same in the last 30 years as it was the 30 years prior to that. I'm not sure what that means other than it hasn't increased over the last 30 years. So basically during the mining operations it was about the same as what they're seeing now. And they base that on sediment core samples.
You mean before the mine started operating or while?
During the mine operation. They didn't have data before.
Now as while the mine was operating.
Okay, let's talk about something positive for a while. The rehabilitation plan addresses these issues: protection against wind erosion, visual aesthetics, wants to work on the mine portal drainage, do something about the tailing seepage, want to do something about the erosion, and we want to bring some fish back in. Now there are fish out here now, but it'd be nice if there are more. Okay, now this is probably the smallest schematic I have, and I hope you can see it. Maybe one of the more important ones, too. This is the construction plan, design plan, for the tailing pile. pile number 1, 2, and 3. The major things are to close the decant towers. They're being sealed off this spring. I think some may have even been sealed off last fall. And I did for that is to reduce any movement of water through the tailings piles. There's several decant towers located throughout. Another thing is to put a runoff channel running along the sides between the side slope of the hill and the tailings piles, along all of them. And the purpose of that is to divert the water that would run onto the pile, and as much water that might divert, much water that might run under the piles, divert it off and run it into Railroad Creek. Hopefully it will be cleaner. Another major issue is to cover 10% of the tailings pile surface with vegetation. So that's these little triangle patches here. And the reason for the triangles is, my understanding is the trucks can go in a straight line like this, okay? So they're going out there and they're covering everything else with the gravel, 6-inch layer, 4-to-6-inch layer of gravel, and they're leaving these little triangular patches for the revegetation work. And I'm not sure when that's gonna start. It may not be until next year before the revegetation occurs. And I've got some additional pictures to show you about some of these things and how they're supposed to look in the end. Let's see. Oh, the other major thing that's going to be done is the rip wrapping between Railroad Creek and the base of the pile. And so they're going to put 2 to 4 foot boulders will be put along the base all the way up Copper Creek. And the main problem right now is at the base of pile number 2 where Copper Creek comes together and where Railroad Creek would like to go back to its old home, but it can't, so it has to go back down this direction. So that's a major problem there. So they're going to be putting that rock riprap along all the way along the base of those piles.
And what holds that in place? Can I ask that?
Okay, they're going to key that in. What they're going to do is they're going to dig under the toe of the pile, and then they're going to key those rocks, supposedly lock them in place, and then build them up over the top of each other. And I've got a cross section of that too, if you kind of help imagine that.
How can they avoid massive pollution in the process of stirring things up like that?
They will be stirring things up severely. And they will be kicking quite a load downstream during that time. There's been discussions with the State Department of Ecology about that. They've got concerns. But the thought is that whatever is being done here, even though there's going to be some short-term problems, it's going to be beneficial in the long term. So, yeah.
Are there presently salmon that spawn up here?
No. My understanding of there's kokanee that come into the lower Railroad Creek, and we captured some last fall. I guess historically there may be more. They did it more often. But they do come in the lower part. My understanding, there's a barrier falls located about a mile up from the mouth. So there's only 2 species of fish that we collected here last year, cutthroat and rainbow.
I don't know the terrain very well, but it looks like a solution might be just rerouting the creek. Just rerouting.
Oh, yeah. That one of the thoughts was to come right across here.
Yeah.
And the concern about that was the velocity that would build up. And I think there was something else in there that had to do with Holden Village. Somebody must actually, Holden Village is up here.
Where we're sitting.
Yeah, no.
That could be.
I think the main concern was that this would create too high of velocities along this area. And then here, there's no place for the creek to go. The only overflow area for the creek really is down in here. And there's an old floodplain down in this part. But they didn't want to get the creek too close to the village, and they also didn't want to move it too close to the road. So the road basically runs right over here. So that was the rationale for that, as far as I know.
What's a decant tower?
A decant tower were towers, or basically shafts that were built down through the tailings pile to help in the removal of water during the mining process. Okay, this is a side view of the interceptor channel. So this is a hill slope here, and the interceptor channel is made of large rock lined with geotextile fabric. And so that's what those look like. Supposedly there'll be trees there someday. Okay, this is the cross section of the of Redwood Creek now. Redwood Creek to be looking at the stream bottom. They're going to have to dig into the toe of the tailings here, and then they'll place the rock riprap so it's locked in place, and then put it up to the, I believe it's at the level of the 50-year flood. So some areas, you will see rock that's on the present floodplain, like halfway down tailings pile number 2, and other areas you'll see it quite a ways up the slope, all depending on what the channel cross-section looks like at that place.
Why didn't they go to 100-year flood level? Just out of curiosity.
I'm guessing cost.
You know, what do they figure is going to happen when the 100-year flood comes and it tops over that?
Yeah, I don't know. That's, you know, when it comes down to it, a plan is developed. Everybody looks at what they'd like to have. They develop a wish list. And then they look at how much, then they get an estimate for that. And then they see how much money they have. And they say, okay, this is what we're going to do. And that's, you know, that's how this kind of a thing happens. There's a finite amount of money, and you know, I don't say I can't speak for that whole process, because you know, basically we just do what we do.
Mm-hmm. But what is geotextile?
It's a man-made fabric that will not degrade, basically, and it's about, well, if you see some black fabric sticking out of the banks up there by Copper Creek, there's some laying around up there. But basically, it's something that's not going to degrade. Okay, these are the vegetation islands, as we like to call them. They're also called vegetation patches. This is a cross section. And so what's going to happen is we've got gravel that's deposited up there on the sides now. The bare areas with tailings exposed, they're going to be dug down to some degree, mix in some lime to bring the pH back up. So mix in lime and gravel for a base. Add topsoil. They're going to plant seedlings, conifers and brush understory. And the theory is that these will create their own organic matter over time, and that these will spread. So again, this is another thing with cost. They looked at how much of the tailings can we cover, 5%, 10%, 20%, and they came up with 10%.
And are these in the contract?
They are in the contract to create the islands and to bring the material in for the islands, and the topsoil and the Forest Service is going to do all the planning.
It's the gravel that you're using. Oh, is that going to affect the pH? I mean, the material in the ground that the ground was made out of.
Yeah, that's going to help. In fact, any rock mulch or anything is going to help. The primary purpose of the gravel layer out there now is for the wind erosion, dust abatement.
Do you have nowhere to gain the topsoil from? It's a long
ways
away.
At Dan's camp, I don't know how many of you have been there, but it was an old gravel pit. And now it is a giant giant new gravel pit. And they are laying aside the topsoil there as they're expanding that pit. So that is where most of the topsoil is coming from. The other thing they're doing is wherever they've got slash or knocking down trees for the road construction and other things, they're gonna lay that on top of the piles too. Okay, construction plan as I know it. Started in 1989, they started building roads. They started putting in the intercept ditches. 1990 is a big year. Pile number 1 has been reshaped. They knocked down some of the big edges and smoothed it out, and they're pushing it back away from Copper Creek to a certain extent, because there's some overflow channels from Copper Creek that cause erosion. They're going to close off the decant towers, complete the drainage system, cover the piles. They've got all of pile number 2 covered now, and I haven't looked at pile 1, but I imagine it's pretty close to being covered. Riprap is going to be placed. Right now the plan is to put it along Copper Creek and down along piles number 2 and 3. The portal drains will be lined. The the ditch along the portal drainage where it runs along the road. I think it's about 200 or 300 feet. They'll dig that ditch down a little bit and put coarse lime in there. And then we'll monitor that to see how that lowers the pH and how long that works. We're going to start creating some fisheries habitat. Part of that is going to be associated with the riprap. They're going to place rock. The riprap they're going to use for rock, they're also going to use to create pools and resting areas, scouring pools for the trout. In 1991, they should complete the riprap, put it up along tailings pile 1. Fisheries enhancement should be completed, likely add some things like log pools, and then the vegetation on the vegetation islands will be planted. I heard a rumor last time when I was here 4 weeks ago that Del Hurt planned on finishing the construction this year, so it'll be interesting to see how it turns out. Showing how they started the roads with the culverts, build a gravel base over them, and the purpose of this kind of a road or a bridge is so that if the water gets too high, it'll just simply flow over the top of it. It won't take the bridge out. And then they built that up this year with additional rock.
Are those going to stay in?
No, they're going to take them out. And this is just shows they had some high flows last fall, and they decided they'd better shore them up. So if you remember what that earlier picture looked like, now they put some big rocks in there. And this is looking across to pile number 1 and some of the reshaping that they've done to that.
Will there be anything put on the sides of the pile?
No. It's basically impossible to do anything about those side slopes because they're so steep. They didn't want to get in. The one thought was to terrace them. They didn't want to do that because I don't know if you remember back to one of the first pictures it showed the cross section, but this outer edge is made of coarser material, and there's a concern that if they were to get in there and disrupt that they might affect the stability of the piles. So that was the primary reason for leaving those the bases as they are. Now hopefully some vegetation or riparian vegetation or something will get established along the top of the riprap, and that'll help shield that area. Okay, this is, again, I just want to show you where they got the gravel. This is Dan's camp, and the topsoil, here's an example of the topsoil layer here. This is the work that they, a month ago, is what they did to tailings pile number 2. And I don't know, well, basically they knocked this whole ridge down and smoothed it out. And these are some old revegetation plots. So it can work. I mean, you can revegetate the tailings pile. And this shows pile number 3 a little clearly with the triangles, future islands. Okay, now the last part is I'm going to talk a little bit about their monitoring plans. Monitoring plans that address water quality, air quality, aesthetics, mainly as it has to do with revegetation. And then I'm going to focus primarily on aquatic biota. That's what I like to talk about. And this is me. Again, we did some, we're taking water quality measurements in the portal drainage. This is the piezometers that I was talking about, looking at the drainage in the piles. Basically, they're clusters of PVC pipe that are placed in different locations. And the purpose of that is to look at the monitor the water level during the year. So, be looking at water levels prior to snow melt, during snow melt, and then over the course of the summer to find out whether they all stay at the same level or whether you see the water dropping off or what. And the hydrologist will be able to tell us what that means. Revegetation is another part. Again, I've just shown these old revegetation plots that were done by the Bureau of Land Management and some by the Forest Service. I think Holden Village actually did some of this work. One thing we're doing is we're looking at the aerial photographs, and we can measure the aerial extent of the vegetative cover with aerial photographs. So they'll come back in 5-10 years from now and repeat what they did prior to construction activities. We did some stream characterization. I don't know how many people were here last summer and saw a couple of idiots wading around in Railroad Creek in 50-degree water, but that was me and last summer's helper. And what we were doing was some stream mapping, and what we wanted to find out was, what is the pool ripple ratios, what kind of habitat is available for trout along the tailings, and how does that compare to areas, similar areas in the wilderness area, and also downstream. We had so-called reference sites where we measured things like pool depth, pool size, what type of cover created the pool, and we moved all the way down along the tailings and did that work. The other kind of thing we did is velocity measurements along with that. And so the whole purpose of this was to give us enough information so that when it came time to come up with a plan for fisheries enhancement, we'd have a good solid base for doing that. In other words, why did we need to go out and create 50 new pools, or did we need to go out and create 5 new pools? We weren't sure. So we do have a plan, and we're addressing that now. Another thing that we looked at were aquatic insects. And basically, this is a modified Cerber sampler where people kick up the rocks and see what floats into the net. And you get a semi-quantitative measurement of the kinds of aquatic insects. Here, the ones of importance are the mayfly larvae, the caddisfly, and the stonefly.
Presently, is there a reduction in those aquatic animals after the portal discharge?
Below tailings pile 2, principally, where you see it. And I'll show you that data. So as soon as I get through with this. We had to block off the stream and look at population estimates of the fish, and that's why we could only do these in the fall, because obviously it's kind of hard to block off Railroad Creek this time of year. So we had a backpack electroshocker. And we shocked those fish, and then we netted them and released them, measured them and released them. And this is what they look like. Okay, what I wanted to show you the last part is the stations that we set up for monitoring the aquatic biota. We have designated 8 stations, one in the wilderness area boundary, one just downstream, and these are kind of our upstream reference controls. We have a station below the mine portal at the near tailings pile number 1, one halfway down the tailings, one at the end of the tailings. Then we go all the way down to 7 Mile Creek and have a station. Then we have a little problem, because it is not very easy to get down to Railroad Creek. So we go down to Dan's camp and we hike down the hill. And we got lucky and found one of the few places where you can actually get down to Railroad Creek. We went down there today and we couldn't get down because the flows were so high. But in the late summer you can actually get down and wade across there. So that's the station, and then we have a final station down at the bridge down by Lucerne. So the purpose of the downstream stations is basically to look to see if there's any recovery. And as we found out, it's not quite so simple as you might think. Okay, this is some data that we took. We go out and scrape the algae off the rocks, okay? And we do that at each site, and we measure the pigment concentration. So we're trying to look at primary productivity as one indication of how good the creek's doing below the tailings pile. So let's look just at these white bars, which are chlorophyll A. And our two upstream stations, we're getting concentrations about 0.2 micrograms per square centimeter. Okay, this is in the vicinity of pile number 1, halfway down pile number 2, and on downstream. By the time we get to 7 Mile Creek, things aren't looking real good for the periphyte. Interesting enough, it jumps up downstream. And what this tells us, first of all, you can't immediately say it's recovery and things are good down there, because we're looking at a 12-mile reach of stream, and we don't know what the conditions were like before the mine tailings were around here. But it may be that we're simply looking at an increase due to the change in the stream characteristics. The channel opens up, there's input of nutrients from the system, And so that, in fact, this may not be recovery. It may be that without the mine tailings, you may be looking at the values up here. We don't know that yet. And that's one reason why we're going to be doing this for the next 4 or 5 years. Okay. We're looking at the benthos now, and what we're calling benthos in this case are the aquatic insects. And again, if you look at the numbers of organisms in our wilderness area upstream of the tailings, they're quite high. They start dropping off about half by the time we get to tailings pile number one. They're extremely reduced all the way through here. Part of the reason is there's not much for them to eat. A lot of them graze on the periphyton on the rocks, and there's not much for them to eat. A little bit of recovery as we move downstream, apparently. Okay, now for the fish. All the fishermen want to know about this. When been waiting for me to quit beating around the bush and get to the fish. Okay, again, we looked at two different kinds of habitat because we looked at both pool and riffle habitat because we knew that Railroad Creek changed, again, over the 12 miles, and that if we're looking at 100 meters of stream in the wilderness area and it was all riffle, and we're looking at 100 meters of stream below the tailings and it's all pool habitat, and we're looking at 100 meters down, further down at, in the canyon where, it's, again, it's mostly riffle habitat, we really couldn't compare those numbers. So we had to look at similar habitats and look at it that way. So we look, first off, we look at the pool data. Basically, even as you get to tailings pile number one, there's a lot of fish. And of course, some of these fish are coming from upstream. And we see a depression all the way down to the mouth. Now, one thing I didn't show is that at station number eight, we caught another species. We caught sculpin, which we didn't catch up here. So if we actually add in the trout and the sculpin, we're looking at numbers back up here again. If we're looking at the riffle habitat, the data looks a little bit different. If you call this a drop, then we'll have to call this a drop too. But basically, the numbers aren't too bad until we get down along the tailings again. And then they're decreased, and they start coming back up again when we get down into the canyon area. So that's it. We end on the fish data. Are there any other questions? I can.
How much of the straightening of Railroad Creek would have affected the habitat and the fish population?
I'd say quite a bit because basically there's no holding areas for those fish during the high flows. And my guess is that a lot of those fish will go down into the tributaries. Basically, fish go into the side channel areas of high flows, and there's no side channel areas. There's some overflow area, but not much. So they'll go probably into some of the tributaries like Ten Mile Creek, you know, where there's, because energetically it makes no sense for them to be out in the middle of Railroad Creek when the flows are going like that. So yeah, that's a severe problem, and that's part of the plan is to, you know, create some pool habitats, some resting areas and things like that. Maybe even introduce some meanders or some, put some bends back into it. Kick it back over to the other channel a little bit.
Do you have any pH data that would correlate with any of that fish data?
Basically, the pH in Railroad Creek is about to stays the same.
Even with the acid water from the portal?
There is some, okay.
In other words, basically it doesn't drop that much when you come through the tailings area. So it isn't the acid, it's mainly that iron hydroxide covering the rocks and keeping the algae from going.
It's
cutting the food chain.
It's a combination really. Because what you're looking at is early in the spring, I looked enough data to suggest that early in the spring during the maximum runoff through the tailings piles, mm-hmm. that there may be toxic concentrations in Railroad Creek. Okay. The metals may be high enough to harm the aquatic life. It may be chronically toxic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's not enough data. You know, people collecting the sample once a month for 2 years, you really can't say. But it suggests to me that there could be a problem with chemical toxicity. Okay. Mm-hmm. But after that runoff time, there's basically nothing leaching in. And so, you know, fish move back in there, and we collected fish that moved back in there. And so then the primary limiting factor is going to be food source.
The pH stays pretty much the same the whole time?
Let's say within a half a pH unit. not to the point that it's going to be toxic.
Right, so pH isn't a factor.
Yeah, it's not, no. It doesn't get to be a factor until it gets to be probably 6.
And it never approaches that. 7 to 8.
Yeah.
I know you're not a mining expert, but what about modern mining methods? How are they reducing the tailing problem?
Yeah, you're right. I'm not a mining expert. I'm not sure. Like I said, I know that they wanted to come back in and rework these tailings last year and decided there wasn't enough money in it after all. They tried to, you know, about every 5 years, somebody comes up with an idea they can do something. But I think that plan went down the tube. My only thought is that there's probably more regulatory pressure not to leave messes like this behind. You know, in those days, they could do it and leave it behind. And now you just can't get away with it. They'd probably have to get 100 permits for the one permit they had to get then.
Was there a problem deciding whether to try to retain the existing revegetation that had already happened on those certain areas, or was that just too low and it wouldn't have worked at all? Because that's all been covered up now, right?
Yeah. We brought that up because I had some concerns about that myself. You know, why get rid of some vegetation that's already there? But the stuff that got covered up had to be because they did have to knock down that ridge. Another thing is that's primarily annuals in there.
Artichoke.
Well, yeah, the artichokes, and there was some kind of a crested wheatgrass or something. And it did come back and looked real nice every year, but I guess it's perennial. But you know, it never was going to go and establish any kind of a community. Mm-hmm. You know, one species community, I guess. But we did collect data and we have the information on how much area that was, and it was a significant amount of cover down there. Okay.
What about the old holding pond area that's farther up from the tailings pile?
The one that's just on the right side of the road as you go up the hill? I think the intercept ditches will probably eliminate a lot of that in terms of water getting back in there. Now, in terms of what's already, you know, what is in there now, whether they're going to do anything that's not part of the plan. The other thing that's not part of the plan are the overburden piles. So,
that holding pond to the right of the road there, if we were to landscape that and fill it in, would that be in danger? Is that there for a purpose?
It's not there. My understanding is that was because they had problems with overflow first from the mine portal and then other overflow from Copper Creek that ran over the backside and down from Tailing Pile 1. If those intercept ditches work, in other words, if those ponds don't fill up next spring, although they probably will, some snow melt, I'm sure they're going to get recharged to some extent, then there may be something that you could do to landscape that. But I can't talk for, you know, the Forest Service. You know, obviously, not all the issues are going to be covered in this plan, and that people are going to have concerns. And I think the Forest Service is pretty responsive to that, and as long as they got money in their budget, they probably will continue to be that way. The problem comes is, you know, when they run out of money, and they're only going to get a finite amount of money, and you know, hopefully they can get all the, you know, the major issues resolved by then.
Some of the problem, I think, maybe Rudy can help with this, but with the overburden pile and that, those holding ponds, I think those are on holding property, and not on public property.
Private land, yeah.
So it kind of restricts to a certain extent what the Forest Service can do.
At one time they were going to use that to cover the tailings piles. That was one thought, which, you know, might not have been too bad of an idea.
Yeah, the overburden.
Yeah, would have got rid of one eyesore and spread it out on another. But they didn't quite know what was in there, and they were concerned with things like, you know, worker health, get into something that, you know, might have, you know, there might be something in that overburden. And again, the private property part of it, I think, was probably the main thing.
Is this a unique problem to this state?
This particular tailings pile is unique to this state, but No, there's other states that have similar problems like this.
Colorado.
Yeah, Colorado for one. Yeah, it's a major problem. I think Forest Service, I'm not sure of the number, but there's something like 50 to 100 other sites scattered around at least that they're, you know, not every system is going to be unique, but other sites where they've, you know, got concerns like this, they've got to do some kind of rehabilitation.
Was any thought given to, or do you have any thoughts about how the area between the top of the riprap and the top of the tailings, in other words, along the side of the tailings, could be reforested?
We would like to push to see some kind of a revegetation plan, see some riparian vegetation established along there. Now, I think the alders will naturally work their way into there, because basically they just need some place where they can get some water and get established. And so I think they'll work their way in there, but it'd be kind of nice if, you know, put some cottonwoods or something that's a little bit taller, that's again native, that would create more of a barrier. But I think the thought is that, you know, some that will get built up and that plants will probably naturally move in there.
On the entire slope?
No, along the top of the...
Yeah, on the top of the riprap.
Only along the top of the riprap.
Right. Yeah,
yeah, only there. There's no way anything's going to get established on the slope.
It's too dry.
Yeah, that's the main problem, is it's too dry. And it's too severe for anything to collect there. Anything... You know, even if they tried to cover it, it'd just slide on down the bottom.
I'm wondering if they thought of establishing topsoil and grass on that. They've given any thought to that?
Well, again, it's the slopes, and they'd have to build the slopes up. And the, one of the, you know, initial things that came out was that the only way you're going to establish anything in there is to change that angle. And, you know, the...
Yeah, most more reasonable, you change that angle.
Yeah. The most reasonable way would be to terrace it, so then you're digging into that outer area.
It's probably a higher angle of repose than most anything you can put on it.
Yeah.
But it would be conceivable for us if let's say the Forest Service doesn't have the money or whatever, to do something on top of the riprap to gradually work that problem somehow. Establishing small islands.
I'd like to see that be, you know, further identified. It may be in this stream rehabilitation stuff they were starting this fall, but a lot of that we can't plan until we see what the riprap looks like. You know, you can look at the scale drawings and imagine what they're going to do, but until they really do it, then we really don't know what we can do.
Yeah.
So we're kind of waiting for that to fall out.
Have you collected any data on how much of the dust that blows actually comes from the steep slopes?
The steep slopes as opposed to the top?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a real good point, because the tops are going to be covered, but that is not, I don't know what percent of the surface. We've got a person working on that now that's going to try to do some calculations to decide exactly how much of that area that's exposed is going to be covered. And we went through that exercise, but yeah, basically there's going to be a lot from the sides. One thing that did come up is that the downstream end of pile number 3, it's obvious where those dunes are formed.
Yeah.
And we had our air quality specialist, when he came out last month, he's made a recommendation to cover those up, which wasn't part of the plan. But again, those will continue to get formed if something isn't done about that. So we're hoping that's, you know, one additional thing to the plan. All those things take time, though, because what happens is as the suggestions work through the system, then they have to get into that whole construction contract. And then the contractor has to decide whether or not they can actually do it or want to do it. So it's, you know, it does take a lot of time for that.
Do you know if they've given any thought to, rather than digging out terraces on the side, to actually building up terraces with pilings and cribbing? Has that ever been tossed around?
Not to my knowledge. The main reason it might not be is because anything that you add onto that face is going to push Railroad Creek over further. In other words,
above the riprap?
No, what I'm saying is you build up the riprap. You don't have enough room, I guess is what I'm saying, in the existing channel.
No, what I'm saying is that once you put the riprap in, between the riprap and the top, putting in like pilings and little shelves to hold any material that you might...
It did talk about putting the slash and things like that, dumping that over the top. And again, we talked about the, you know, the riparian, trying to get the riparian vegetation established along that, the top of that riprap. Yeah. But I don't know what you can do with that steep face.
Logging slash.
Yeah.
That's on all kinds of big, heavy stuff.
Right, that's...
Have they thought about dumping a bunch of that on?
That's one thing that they've talked about doing. But whether or not they're actually going to do that on the steep face, I don't know. I can't say.
Nothing else would break up the wind velocity at the surface.
That is a good point, though.
How about your paper? It doesn't degrade. Put that all on the paper.
Yeah. A lot of that had to do with the visual aesthetics, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. That was one of the thought was to layer that with the geotextile fabric. They didn't want to do, you know, they decided not to do that. But that's basically what's done in a lot of areas, you know, construction, road construction and that. They just lay that stuff down and that's what's there. And I don't know if it will come to that or not.
You keep saying it's a very steep slope, and I've seen it's pretty steep, but if plants like ivy and there's other climbing plants like steep slopes, has there been any of this that type of thing?
Well, like I say, there's a couple of things. It's real compact there. Any way you look at it, you're going to have to add something there for them to grow on and to hold water. So it's real compact, and it doesn't get any moisture. And so to get anything to colonize and stay is just about impossible in that kind of environment, along with the low pH. A lot of, you know, most plants cannot tolerate that. You can see a lot of the conifers don't seem to mind it after they get a little bit of stuff built up or a little coarser material like that, you know, ring of fir and spruce all along that rim. And those obviously moved in on their own.
The Railroad Creek seems to be contained by artificial cribbing all the way up past the vehicle bridge. Mm-hmm. But now it looks like a lot of that cribbing is starting to rot out and disintegrate. Going to cause some future problems for the stability of that reach of the channel?
I mean from above pile number one up? That's interesting because, that's not covered in terms of the plan is to do any more riprap up above there. But, you know, you're right because that is contained from the vehicle bridge downstream.
There are places where it seems to be.
Thank you.